Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
Ball is swung on and driven to right field. A base hit. It's going to roll to the corner. Mookie scores. Benintendi flying around second. Ball is kicked around by Acuna in the corner. Here comes Benintendi around third to score, and the Red Sox lead.
Recapping the Red Sox win against the Braves.
Line drive right field toward the corner. It's going to get down for a hit. It's going to roll all the way to the wall. Nunez scores. Mookie rounding third. He scores easily. Benny on his way to third. He dives in safely with a triple, and the Red Sox lead it 8-5. Andrew Benintendi.
Dial 617-779-7937. Now, Red Sox Review on WEEI.
Hour 3 of Red Sox Review on WEEI. I'm Paul Gallant after an 8-6 win for the Red Sox over the Atlanta Braves. Big thanks for the Sox, and especially from one Drew Pomerantz, to Andrew Benintendi and Mitch Moreland, who had good days at the plate. Benintendi with a solo shot home run. He also had a triple of his own, 3-for-4 on the game. And Mitch Moreland, he goes 2-for-5, continues his hot play. He gets a double, he gets a triple, he had a home run last night. But Drew Pomerantz, yikes, it was a shaky outing. 3 1/3, 6 hits allowed. Walking 3-2 along the way. He had 5 earned runs, and he left after that 3 1/3 with an ERA now on the season of 6.75. Yikes. He's got to stop pitching. Stop putting him in. They got to figure out what to do with the guy, and I think that the best option is to just take him entirely out of the starting rotation for now. Put him on the disabled list with some fake injury. You could do what the Astros did with Josh Reddick. Josh Reddick apparently got bit by a spider. It's got a little infection going on. I mean, there are so many options that you could give for Drew Pomerantz, but you heard him after today's game. And Kyle, if you could get that audio, that would be sick. It just doesn't sound right. Something is up with the guy, and we're seeing it with our eyes, but when you hear him talk about it, it's not the kind of BS that you typically hear from a pitcher who still feels confident in himself. Yeah, you know, my stuff was good. It just wasn't finding the right, you know, it just was a bad day. It just wasn't my day at the office. I hate it when pitchers do that, by the way. It's such BS. Like, shut up, dude. You gave up 6 runs. What are you talking about? What are you trying to pull here? But Drew Pomerantz, it was a shaky outing. Hey, bro, how you feeling after this one?
I think it's pretty clear, even for everyone, you know, it's not like I'm out there and just can't, you know, this year just can't cut it, you know, it's clearly something I need to figure out mechanically, something I need to start doing correctly to get that jump back in velocity. You know, I just, every time I try to throw a pitch where I want to, it's not going where it's supposed to, so, you know, I just got to figure out that step that I'm skipping there.
Ugh. Well, I got to figure out that step I'm skipping. That's not a good sign if you don't know what that step is. He did have a good year last year. I mean, we're talking about an ERA in the twos, 14 wins. The discrepancy from last year to this year, it is something that is inexplicable, but definitely requires him to stop pitching. Just stop pitching him, man. You could have lost today. That could have cost you ultimately at the end of the year. It looks like this Red Sox-Yankees race is going to go down to the wire. Probably the race for the number one record in the American League and home field advantage throughout is also going to be up for grabs with the Astros off to a pretty good start themselves. You need every single win that you can get. You keep putting it out, Drew Pomerantz, you're going to lose. You're going to lose games like this. And look, you have a very good offense at the top of the order with guys like Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez not doing a lot today. Xander Bogaerts not doing a lot today. Mitch Moreland and Andrew Benintendi hit well. You've got a great top of the order. But when it comes down to Drew Pomerantz and the starts that you have that aren't Chris Sale, David Price when healthy, Rick Porcello, though maybe not in his last start. After that, this is your next man up. If
it's one thing to go out there and pitch sometimes and be like, hey, my curveball's not good today. I'm going out there right now and feeling like nothing's good. So it's kind of frustrating. You know, it's really frustrating. But like I said, our offense is so good that they've been bailing me out of all these crappy starts I've run out there.
At the very least, he knows it. At the very least, he knows that the offense is helping him out. But Alex Cora's got to know it. And Alex Cora's got to do something about it. 617-779-7937, Red Sox Review with me, Paul Gallant. Steve is in Miami. Steve, what's up?
How you doing today?
I'm doing well, Steve.
Okay, a couple of things, because I don't know how many people are on the board for you, so I'll go right through.
You got plenty of time, bro.
Okay, great. Thank you. Hanley Ramirez, while I've enjoyed how he's acted this year, being down here and being a Marlins fan, trying to be a Marlins fan.
Jeez, I don't know how you do it, bro. That's awful.
Double A, Triple A, I don't know. I mean, they've got the guy that they got for Ozuna, Brinson. He's batting. He's a rookie, batting 159. Any other team, he'd be in Double A, Triple A, whatever. You need more than a scorecard to know what these players are.
No organization has been less deserving of the two championships that the Marlins have won than the Miami Marlins.
Yeah, well, I mean, the ownerships.
Because of the ownership, right. The ownership, like the fan base, 100%. The ownership, like just middle fingers nonstop with whoever owns the team. Now Derek Jeter and the weaselly things that he's doing. And the owners before, too, with the stripping right after winning World Series that they used to do.
I will tell you, I was thrilled when Jeter was announced. And now even Yankee fans down here, although they say, well, good, he's helped the Yankees. But he just doesn't get it.
No, he sucks. He sucks. And I'm not going to lie, I kind of like seeing that Derek Jeter isn't this perfect figure that everyone used to paint him to be. I remember when I was a child just thinking, like, oh, wow, Derek Jeter. Like, why do I have to like Derek Jeter? I have to respect Derek Jeter? No, I want to irrationally hate Derek Jeter. Anyway, Steve, what are your thoughts on Pomeranz and Hanley?
Okay, well, first of all, Hanley, so when he was with the Marlins, and, of course, he won Rookie of the Year, and he was very good, when things turned sour, he turned sour. I still remember when he was playing third base. I forget which. It might have been Brad Penny. I'm not sure. But a pitcher, there was a hit down the third baseline, and he sort of like...
He didn't try.
Went into the foul territory, and there was a big to-do with the pitcher and all that. And when things go sour, he does. And I'm happy that they got rid of him before this happened, because it was going to be interesting to see what they did down the road, because with his contract for next year, we all know that the Red Sox did not want to. I mean,
oh, they didn't want to pay. You're right. You're right, Steve. I'll say this though. I mean, you're missing that bat. You need that bat. You're going to need that bat in the playoffs. And I don't think that getting rid of the guy that, I mean, you can afford to spend $250 million on this team. You're the Boston Red Sox. You can afford to pay that luxury tax, even if the luxury tax hurts a lot, because you've been doing it. Now, to save money, fine. Okay, you're saving money, but you're getting nothing in return for this, and you're basically pissing away $15 million for the rest of the season. And the back of this order, when you're in a big-time situation, you're going to trust Jackie Bradley Jr. or Vasquez or some of the other guys that they have out there. I sure as bleep don't. I don't at all. And you don't have anyone to turn to right now off of the bench. So I think they put themselves in a tricky situation for these situations that will happen down the road, where it's a close game in the back of the order. Can't give them a damn thing. So I understand what you're saying with Hanley maybe checking out and all that. I know that that can happen from time to time with Hanley Ramirez. But with the team having the best record in baseball, I think he would have been okay this time around, sitting around on the bench and being a guy that can be used off the bench, because he seemed like he liked Alex Cora. I suppose maybe Alex Cora, that's the reason that he suggested it. Maybe he sensed that something was awry. This is the first big, big kind of decision by Alex Cora, because this was not a Dave Dombrowski move. Your thoughts on Pomeranz, Steve, before we go?
Well, we know that Dombrowski was thinking of Swihart, so yeah, this was a Cora move and all that. Now, Pomeranz, I can only hope, and Red Sox Nation can only hope, if you remember last year, he started off terrible too, and then he progressed. And
this is different, though. This is different.
That's what I'm saying. Somebody's got to take him aside and say, okay, this, you know, show video of what he did last year, whatever. And I don't know, maybe he's still not 100%. And if so, get him off the team. And the guy that I would love to see starting, and he started off so great as a starter, would be Hector Velasquez. He's great.
Yeah, you had two good starts to open the year, Steve. And appreciate the phone call, Steve. I'd like to see Hector Velasquez out there. I'd like to see Steve Wright out there. I mean, he had a good night. He had a nice day today in relief. Guys like that deserve opportunities. Give them the opportunities. Reward them. Reward them for having pitched in that spot before and doing okay. Reward them for coming in a game like this and actually holding their own. It wasn't a dominant performance by Wright, but hell, he got through the game quickly. And, you know, for me, someone who hates how long these sluggish baseball games can get, we need more pitchers like Steven Wright. We need more pitchers like Chris Sale. We need more guys that can actually get the ball to home plate and get to the next pitch and the next pitch and the next pitch instead of adjusting their crotch for 5 hours or whatever the hell these guys do in between pitches. And it drives me nuts. And we need to set a rule. Kyle, we've talked about this before. We got to set a rule here. If you are not a cool pitcher, and by cool pitcher, I mean talented, you do not get to waste my time adjusting your balls as you're trying to throw those balls. You don't get to do it. Pitch the damn ball. Thank you. That's all I ask for. It's not a whole lot. I just want the games to move by rapido, and I'm not getting that with Drew Pomeranz, and I'm also just watching bad pitching. He's shaky. He's unconfident in himself, and it's not good. 617-779-7937 to call in to Red Sox Review. I'm Paul Gallant. I do also want to touch on the Celtics with Game 7 tomorrow. I'm not feeling great. I'm not feeling great about tomorrow's game, and I know that there are there's no Kevin Love for the Cleveland Cavaliers. I know he's out. They should have won last night with Kevin Love out for the majority of the game. Somehow they won. Amazingly, when Kevin Love has been off the court in these playoffs, the Cavs have been better. If you just take a look at the actual plus-minus, it doesn't make any sense, but they've actually been better with him off of the court. I'm not 100% sure why, but it has worked better for them. They should have won last night. They gave the Cavs second life, and really, the only thing that I could see keeping this from being the first time the Celtics get really challenged at the TD Garden, I feel like it's going to happen, man. I think LeBron right now, he played 46 minutes last night, and everyone's talking about how tired he is. I think he's sort of setting things up for his eventual leave from Cleveland. Well, he left it all on the table. He didn't mail it in like he did at the end of that series that the Celtics took him down, and then he left Cleveland for Miami the next offseason. I don't think we're going to see him mail it in at any point. And I know that he's sort of setting up the dramatic and the theatrics for his eventual departure to, I don't know where, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, probably not. Philadelphia seems the most likely place, but it's going to be a weird fit with Ben Simmons. But I think that he can do what he did last night again. Like, they don't have an answer for him.
If you are walking out LeBron James in that game, that scares the hell out of me.
Oh, wow. Do I sound like Glenn Ordway on that? Look, I saw what he did in this past game, and that was the kind of LeBron that you want no part of. You go back to a couple of games earlier in the series when LeBron had that ridiculous first quarter. I think it was game two. And he was hitting stupid shots, stupid turnaround shots. But he sucked the rest of the game. Like, he didn't do anything the second, the third, and the fourth quarter. I know he ended up with the 41 points. But the first quarter was where he did all his damage. He didn't do much defensively. In last night's game, every single minute, he was putting in effort. Which is surprising because he died. Or at least he sort of made himself to look like a possum for a second before 5 seconds later. I was watching it at a bar, and all of a sudden I thought to myself, well, I bet LeBron's going to go to the bench. Man, that really sucks to see him get hurt. I actually said this to myself. I said this to my friends nearby. I felt like such a poon, just looking to my friends to my left and my right and like, man, you know, I don't like LeBron, but I hate to see that happen. And then they come back from the commercial break, and he's fine. And he just dunks like 5 seconds later. Gosh. It was so annoying. He really is easily my least favorite figure in sports right now. And I know that there are a lot of players in basketball that do the same things that he does. But damn, he is such a diva. And man, he is so calculated with his diva nature. Maybe not so much with his Instagram, though. I don't know how a grown man on Instagram thinks that it's cool to basically start like running around and doing a selfie video of yourself running around at the gym without a shirt. Like, I don't get that. It's not like he's sexting anybody or anything like that, is it? Does he want to show off that bod? Hey guys, look, I might be losing my hair, but I got some sweet pecs. Look at them. Look at my boobies. Is that what he's doing? I don't get it. I don't understand how that is something that actually processes through his mind. And this is something that I think he's in his Zero Dark 23 mode. I don't think he really understands Zero Dark 30 and that terminology. All I know really about the terminology itself is that there is the movie, and it's about how they got Osama bin Laden. Yeah, this is the information that is honestly completely useless because I don't remember anything, and honestly, I just don't really retain a whole lot of information. But I do remember this because for whatever reason, it just rubbed me the wrong way. Why are you dancing around shirtless, LeBron? What are you doing? What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you where you're just like dancing around the gym like you're Julie Andrews in The Sound of Music? This workout is wonderful in the land of Cleveland. Like, I don't get what are you doing? What are you doing, you weirdo? And I just hate that part of him. And I also dislike this aspect of him. I'm just going to keep bitching about LeBron James, who is the best player in basketball. And I think that's the most infuriating part of all of it. I don't get why he just doesn't call out his teammates. Like, why does he have to be so passive-aggressive and calculated with the way that he does it? Like, putting up these weird, bizarre Instagram posts with these, like, real obscure references there. Does he get a kick out of just sitting back and drinking a glass of wine and saying, sheesh, after every single person that gets in his mentions tries to come up with a hot take based off of what he put out there? Is that what he does this all for? I don't know. I suppose he actually occupies real estate in my brain because here I am just like wondering why he does all these stupid things that he does. God, he's the worst. Absolute worst. But he's really good. And I think that there's a very good chance that he can do the same exact thing that he did last night. The Celtics, they're essentially children out there. They've overachieved, all that stuff. But how do you get outscored in the second quarter like that? How do you miss free throws? How do you miss allow offensive rebounds, two offensive rebounds on some possessions, bad passes, turnovers, missed free throws, missed easy 4 feet shots, and like Jeff Green's clowning you. What's wrong? What was happening there? It drove me nuts. I mean, it was just such a sloppy quarter, and I feel like the Celtics' mindset is in those moments, well, you know, we'll be fine. We'll go back to the TD Garden. Things are going to be A-okay. And I just think that's such a dangerous mindset to have when LeBron knows this is his title. He's going to leave it all out there. He knows he's not beating either Golden State or the Rockets if the Rockets somehow pull this off tonight. He knows he's not beating either of those two teams. They're way better than anyone in the NBA. Those two, they were the best two teams in the league this year. This is essentially his last game. And I think he wants to get to the finals one more time, even if he ends up losing in it. And there's that weird argument. And look, I think we all sort of look at it from the perspective of, if you make it to that many big games, even if you lose a bunch of them, you're damn good. Oh, but Michael Jordan was undefeated. Yeah, but Michael Jordan also had some ones and duns. LeBron has gone to the finals over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. We're going to penalize him because he's always there? I don't get that. But Michael Jordan was 6-0. Well, people made the same argument with Joe Montana being 4-0. And think about some of the finals that LeBron James has dragged his team to in. I mean, first off, they had no chance last year against the Golden State Warriors with Kevin Durant. They had no chance there. The first finals that LeBron dragged the Cavaliers to, that team stunk. I don't know how the hell they got there either. Beating the Detroit Pistons and finally getting it. And I look at them and all that entire run of LeBron. And again, I loathe him. Can't stand him as a sports fan. Just makes my blood boil. I can't explain why, but the run that he has had is really incredible, and I think that he realizes, you know what, this is probably the last chance that I have to make myself look good this year before this offseason where I nobly go off in search of a ring elsewhere and look to, with a fourth different team, go to the NBA Finals. And I say fourth different team, I know he's been with the Cleveland Cavaliers to the Finals twice, but, I mean, isn't it incredible that the guy in essentially three entirely different franchises have made it to the finals. him as a rookie and that first awful Cavs unit that he played with, going to the Heat, forming that super team, coming back to the Cavs, forming another sort of super team of sorts, and getting that one title too. It is crazy what he's been able to do. And I just don't want any part of him in Game 7. I mean, I still have trauma from Game 6 at the Garden back in 2012. I remember, I think I watched that at Hurricane O'Reilly's downtown with some friends, just watching LeBron completely eat the Celtics alive. It was awful. And we just sat there and we're like, oh, he's just going to hit it. Oh, he's going to hit that shot too. Oh, he hit that shot. Oh, he hit another one. It just kept on hitting everything. And ever since then, he has owned that Celtic ass. He has. I would like to see it come to a crashing end. I'd love to be the end of LeBron James twice. But that Game 6 just scarred me forever. The end of the Celtic team with Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, and Rondo. That was it. That game, he killed them. He murdered all of them. And then he brought Ray Allen in as a zombie of sorts. 617-779-7937 is how you call in. You can tweet me, too, at Gallant Says. It's Red Sox Review on WEEI. Okay, Hanley Ramirez was designated for assignment. Is there anyone at the back of the order that the Red Sox can actually expect good things out of going forward? We'll talk about that next. I'm Paul Gallant. This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
Get your ticket and first class, you know, whatever coach is about to be had.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
The way Mitch is swinging the bat, the way he plays defense, and this is not about this year. Mitch was a good player last year, too, for this team. I think his numbers suffered a hit because of the injury. He did a good job. And I did feel that the roles were about to change. You saw the at-bats yesterday against one of the best lefties in the big leagues, Snell. Hit two balls the other way, running the screws. He's putting good at-bats against lefties. It seems like he's not expanding the zone. People might think it's a small sample size, but he's been doing it for a while. We felt that it was going to improve our defense, too, so I felt that was where we were going. We went there.
Look, I get putting Mitch Moreland in more than Hanley Ramirez. I just don't get DFA Hanley Ramirez. That's Red Sox manager Alex Cora. I'm Paul Gallant. This is Red Sox Review on WEEI. The big news from Friday, the Red Sox surprisingly decided to designate Hanley Ramirez for assignment because of, per Dave Dombrowski, a desire to see more Mitch Moreland, a desire to see more Blake Swihart, and because Hanley Ramirez wouldn't handle being on the bench very well. I think that that last part of the decision is definitely a fair one to consider. But at the same time, when I look at the lack of any juice at the back of this batting order, don't you need a guy like this for the stretch run? Don't you need to have somebody that you can put in a pinch hitting situation that is going to give you a chance at the plate?
I don't think that Hanley is a person that sits handling on the bench well.
I think that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what he handles well. You know, when he was called in off of the bench in the Red Sox-Astros first-round series last year, he kicked ass. He was 8 for 14 in that series. It doesn't matter how he handles it, does it? Is Hanley Ramirez going to submarine the best team in baseball because he's sitting on the bench? And I suppose there's a chance where the Red Sox won't be the best team in baseball a month from now, 2 months from now. But you just decided to throw away a $15 million purchase, essentially. And I know that you'd have to pay another $22 next year, but I don't think when it comes to the Red Sox, I just don't buy into the idea of saving money. You have all of this money. Spend it. Spend all of it. And look, it's nice that you have Dustin Pedroia back. Wonderful. Neat. Splendid. but I hate the last three bats in this lineup on a regular basis. I mean, today you had Eduardo Nunez, Christian Vasquez at the back. Your catchers, I mean, Sandy Leon, you're not feeling great about him. Blake Swihart, you're not feeling great about him. I don't want to see, on a regular basis, Jackie Bradley Jr. either. I just don't understand why someone's defense trumps having a kind of bat like Ramirez is off the bench. I just don't get it. And as pointed out a little bit earlier by a caller, Jackie Bradley Jr.'s struggles are going back for months. And I don't think he's ever going to get that back. Oh, but he's had a nice week, Paul. Fine, cool. He has a double. He has a triple in the last week. That's splendid. But he's still hitting in the 170 range. You need better than that at the back of the order. And you need guys off of the bench that you can trust. You need to have somebody who can step in a big-time spot as a pinch hitter. And I think Hanley would have been great in that spot. I do. And I think that having that kind of depth, I think it's important. And I think he could have done something differently here.
I think we're on the same page, Paul, but I think one thing that would make sense for them making this move is that last year they don't want somebody like Hanley sitting on the bench to sour, because at the end of the year the clubhouse was so bad and Farrell had sort of lost the clubhouse, and Cora seems to be doing a pretty good job with that this year. So I think maybe Dombo's looking at it like they're not trying to lose the clubhouse already if this guy's going to sit on the bench and sulk.
Yeah, that's fair, Kyle, to lose. But, I mean, don't you feel like with John Farrell gone, that problem, I think, has also sort of rectified itself?
100%. That's why this isn't a move I would want to make. But I can sort of see it. This is the only really logical way that I can see it making sense.
If Farrell was still here, I actually probably wouldn't have a problem with it, because just knowing now, maybe it's revisionist history to know what we know about Farrell right now, but I mean, look at the change between last year and this year in a variety of the Red Sox bats, and also just take a look at what these guys seem to be having. This is cliche and lame, and I hate even saying this, but they seem to be having a whole lot more fun out there. It does help when you're winning all the time. I think Hanley would be fine on the bench. I think Hanley would be fine on the bench with a guy who's played recently as his manager and a guy who seems to actually get his players, relate to his players. I remember seeing stories about Cora and Hanley talking to each other during the offseason. I don't think Hanley would mind being on the bench that much. I don't. I think that Hanley would be good in that spot. I think he was pissed off that he was on the bench to open up the divisional series. But I think if you explain to him, I mean, he's a guy who's up there in age. Is he really going to be that ticked off that Mitch Moreland, who's hitting the way that he's hitting, is playing more than him? I mean, if he is, he's crazy. He's nuts. You know, like that is the epitome of selfish. I suppose that there is a possibility of that happening, but I say you're paying him money. At least give it time to fester. And if it festers and you get rid of him in the clubhouse and in the locker room, then fine. But you're going to do it right away? You're going to do it right now instead of just putting him on the bench for a little bit?
Right. I mean, I could see them making that move if they had tried to drop him down in the order, or they would have put him on the bench. But this guy was hitting second and third in the lineup in the last 2 weeks. It's odd that they would just cut ties with a guy that fast.
You're right. And yeah, I think if you wanted to maybe get him hitting better, move him down in the order, because he was 0 for 20. Just move him around the order. Sometimes that jumpstarts a guy. That's worked for Alex Bregman with the Astros a couple of times. If a guy's in the midst of a slump, I say you move him down the order, see if he can figure himself out at the back of the order. I think he would have figured himself out. I mean, he's still hitting 250, and he's got that power. He is a good hitter. Streaky hitter, but a good hitter. When he is on a hot streak, he's really good. Now the question is, all right, well, where does he end up? Who's going to pick him up? I mean, $500,000? I think that the Houston Astros, who are looking for a designated hitter, they would definitely consider a Hanley Ramirez type. And if you're not going to be on the hook for his money, I mean, why not? If you're one of these teams in the American League that's a contender. If you're the Yankees, why not take a look at it either? I mean, bring the guy in. is he that much of a cancer? Is he well known as a bad teammate to the point where no one's going to bring him in? I don't think so. So I don't like it. I would have rather had a bat to bring in off the bench in the playoffs, and now you've lost that. And he is going to be somewhere else. They're going to be someone. Team is going to be more than willing to pay him $500,000 either to put him in the minors or to give him a shot in the starting lineup and see what he can do. And you didn't get anything in return for him other than no $22 million check that you have to write out for him next year. 617-779-7937. I'm Paul Gallant. You're listening to Red Sox Review on WEEI. You could tweet me, too, if you so choose, at Gallant Says. The other big story coming out of the Red Sox 8-6 victory over the Atlanta Braves today is Drew Pomeranz. Gross. So those are the negative stories, and I hate to just beat you to death with all the sad things. Paul, they're the best team in baseball. What's your problem, man? You did see Dustin Pedroia out there today. I like that 10-pitch at-bat that he had that ended with a hard grounder up the middle. Could have been a base hit, potentially, if there wasn't a deflection. It was nice. It was the same old gritty Dustin Pedroia that everyone always talks about, and he even got his jersey dirty. They were really hamming that up on Nesson a little bit, too. Yeah, he's just a guy who likes to get his jersey dirty. I'm not going to lie. I would hate to have dirt on my jersey. I would hate it. It was, like, kind of nasty, diving around in the infield, get all that mud on it. I would want to wear gloves, too. Like, I'd want to wear gloves while I'm in the field. I know that sounds really girly or perhaps feminine or whatever. I don't care. There is no worse feeling than having dirt on your hands. Having a dirt on your shirt? Oh, yeah. Slide. Like, I'd rather have it on my pants. If it's on my pants, it's fine. I don't want it on my shirt. Head first slide? No. I'm absolutely sliding feet up. Feet up all the time. Spikes up all the time. Yeah, no one's going to tag you there, huh? Huh? But Pedroia, on a serious note, had a pretty solid day today. He turned a double play, too, and it was a very nice turning of a double play. So you have him back out there, but at the back of the order, you got to figure it out. And I don't want to see any more Jackie Bradley Jr. He did come in as a replacement defensively for J.D. Martinez at the very end of the game. But you got to figure something out at the very back. As far as the top of the order is crushing it right now. I mean, you had Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez hit well last night, and today you had Andrew Benintendi, who continues to make that average go higher and higher and higher, up to 283 now after a 3-for-4 performance with a home run and a triple. And Mitch Moreland, he's hitting 321 right now after he hit a double and a triple today. They're getting some great performances out of those two, and while Xander Bogaerts has cooled off a little bit, he had a nice day too, 1-for-3 with 2 walks. The top of this lineup is great. Maybe you can get away with having a crappy last 3 in your order if you have 6 guys who are really good. And maybe the question is, can you shuffle the order in a way where you just don't have 3 complete duds, 3 pitcher-esque batting options at the back? With Eduardo Nunez, who struck out twice today. Blake Swihart, who struck out twice today, but did get a hit. Neat. And Christian Vasquez, too. I'm Paul Gallant again, WEEI. You are listening to Red Sox Review, 617-779-7937. Is the newest Yankee addition better than the Yankee addition of Giancarlo Stanton this offseason? Plus, I am bewildered that this person continues to get second chances. You're listening to Red Sox Review. I'm Paul Gallant, and this is WEEI.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
Swung on, hit in the air to right field and deep. It is high. It is far. It is gone. A Stantonian home run to right field. Giancarlo. Non de medica. That ball sure traveled far. Giancarlo. He hits his second home run of the night. Giancarlo. Non si può stopparlo.
I know people hate on John Sterling. I love John Sterling. He's such a cheeseball. You know what? I don't think there's anything wrong with just hamming it up in the middle of these broadcasts. I mean, don't we love Jack Edwards? Don't we love just random, strange things being said by our broadcasters? Don't we all love crazy old Uncle Tommy Heinsohn? Don't we love that? I don't think there's anything wrong with John Carlos with John Sterling. I know we all roll our eyes mainly because he's the New York Yankee broadcaster, but I would pay to hear him sing. I would pay to hear him sing. Like, listen to him singing on that call. Oh man, just a sex symbol right there, wooing ladies out of their pants. Imagine Susan Waldman in the studio right there as he makes that call. Oh John, you're getting me so hard right now. Like I'm telling you that was beautiful. It was Frank Sinatra-esque. A little Frank Sinatra light there. Nothing wrong with singing in the midst of a broadcast. Honestly, I feel like he should just sing an entire game broadcast. I'd listen to that. I think for the most part, it's you know, a long baseball season, very boring for a lot of the regular season. Jazz it up a little bit. Do a game where you only can sing. I love it. Wonderful, wonderful. I'm Paul Gallant. It's Red Sox Review on WEEI. Gleyber Torres, the newest Yankee addition, has hit 4 home runs in his last 4 games. He's hitting .333 in 28 games with 9 homers and 24 RBIs. Giancarlo Stanton, meanwhile, has played in 48 games. And while he struck out a lot, 63 times to be specific, basically a third of his at-bats, he has 11 home runs and is hitting, at this point, on the young year, .257. So, that was the acquisition that everyone was excited about with the Yankees this offseason, and it's why they got the slop fest from the national media all offseason long, despite going into this season the runner-up in the American League last year, because they added Stanton. Well, Stanton hasn't done a whole lot, but this Gleyber Torres kid is damn good. He is really good. And, you know, after Didi Gregorius' great start, he's cooled off a whole lot. That's a damn good Yankee team. They've got a lot of power. They've got a lot of solid players out there. And it is infuriating that they have brought up yet another baby. And this guy is having the same kind of start that we're seeing from Aaron Judge. I was pissed off this offseason when there was this very presumptive book that was put out by some author. It's like called Baby Bombers or something along those lines. Baby Bombers, and it's about the story of the future dynasty New York Yankees and how they came to be. And I was like, geez, are you kidding me? You're going to write a book about a dynasty before the dynasty has even begun? But then this guy comes up, and I'm like, shoot, I can't even talk trash about this. He's 100% right. It feels like that at the very least. Like, and the funniest thing of all is that to get Aroldis Chapman, to get him, the Cubs traded this guy to the Yankees, and the Yankees have Aroldis Chapman again. It's funny how that works. So he's hitting really well, and he is playing better to this point, and quite clearly, than Giancarlo Stanton. Something took place in the world of sports this week, and it rubs me the wrong way, and perhaps it's because I'm a bitter 29-year-old that thinks I'm extremely talented, but probably isn't anywhere close to as talented as he believes himself to be. But there is really just something to ESPN hiring Keith Olbermann again that just makes me angry. I mean, I don't understand how you can continue to hire a person who no one likes. I mean, just on a personal standpoint, like no one at ESPN or CNN or whatever that weird resistance website that Olbermann had, I don't think anyone liked this guy. I don't think anyone likes this guy. He's super talented, but no one can work with him. He's a crazy person, absolute crazy person. They're bringing him back again.
This tin pot dictator.
It is bizarre to me that people like him continue to get second chances, even when you know all the baggage that he comes with, and that he's not a ratings boon either. That said, wouldn't you love to see psycho lib Keith Olbermann on the air talking about sports? I kind of, like, I mean, I think he is unhinged at this point. I would love to see clips of him randomly calling players and figures in sports Nazis. Because, I mean, you know he'll do it. I forget who he called. Shoot, I think he calls everyone Nazis these days. Problematic to do that, by the way. Your boy, me, although some of you, so whatever. I'm just going to call myself your boy, like I'm cool and hip. I went to Greece a couple of years ago, and for some reason I kept on calling all my friends Nazis based off of things that they were doing. Oh, you're a playlist Nazi. Oh, you're a shower water Nazi. Oh, you're a... Like, I just kept on doing it. And I kept on forgetting. If you say that word, essentially, overseas, like, people get pissed. They get mad. We say it's just casual. We just throw it out there. Oh, yeah,
Peter,
you're a Nazi.
Can't you see I'm busy?
Yeah, what are you doing? Stuff?
Yes.
Nazi stuff?
Yes, Peter, Nazi stuff.
Yeah, Nazi stuff. I would love, like, if Keith Olbermann starts going off on Nazi tangents that have to do with sports and somehow brings them together, I'd watch it. I would watch a crazy person trying to do a TV show. I would watch it. I don't think it'll work out very well for ESPN in the long haul. Like, I'm just counting down until he says something psychopathically politically that will end up causing ESPN to go back to trying to pander to the right, which they've been sort of trying to do over the last year. I can't believe they brought back Hank Williams because they felt like that would appeal to the conservative side of those who maybe were turned off by ESPN. It is a bizarre decision. You would just think, if you're working with a super talented person that is just a giant a-hole, at some point, you got to realize that you know exactly what you're going to get, so why even bother with this? Like, what does this do? Who are they trying to bring back? Is some random cord cutter at age 25 going to think, you know what? Keith Olbermann's back on ESPN. I'm going to do this. I'm going to get a cable subscription for $180 a month. Or I'm going to sign up for ESPN's new apps. No one watches this sports on TV stuff anymore. Like, I don't. I never do. I watch the games. But how many people, like, actually watch sports on TV? And that's why I enjoy being a part of sports radio. I feel like, at the very least, for now, it's relatively safe compared to an industry like sports on TV. Like, do people actually wake up and watch those talking head shows? If you do, like, what are you doing to yourself? You're just going to make yourself mad. But I really wanted to hear Stephen A. Smith's takes, Paul. I really like his diction. I really wanted to see Max Kellerman talk trash about Massachusetts because a couple of people have gotten under his skin on Twitter. I don't understand it. The talking head TV phenomenon, I will never get it. And this is coming from someone who, you know, every now and then I do a little TV, but I don't watch sports on TV. I'm always amazed when people, like, respond to anything that I do on TV. Listen to the radio. Listening to sports radio, 100%, that's the way to go. Watching sports on TV, I don't know. Bringing Keith Olbermann back, you're not bringing anyone back with this. You're just pissing off a specific audience that's already pissed off at you. And on top of that, you're bringing back a crazy person who's going to be a complete jackass to everyone that he works with. Oh, well, that's ESPN for you. Big thanks to everyone who tuned in today. I am merely Paul Gallant. You want to chat with me after the show? @GallantSays is how you do it. Big thanks to Kyle Deleuze producing this show at the Mothership. Hope you all have a great Memorial Day weekend. And until next time, later, bros.
Waiting for someone to tell you everything. Sit around and wonder what tomorrow will bring. Maybe a diamond.
Well, it's all right.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.